This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
You've waited all week long for the ship to arrive. Well, it's here. The Ship with Darren Smith, here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You saw fun and games till we get into the ring, and then you find out who's softer than Aquafina. If you can't stand the heat, stay away from my arena, cause all I bring is heat. You can call me Jalapeno, keep my name out your mouth unless you're trying to sing. Accolades that you get from seeing a champion. Belt, trophy, or ring, if you gotta show your bling, then tune in to The Ship where we talk about it, man. But if you tune in, you better know it's showtime. And every time he speak, man, he gonna speak his mind. Keeping the straight facts while others, they just assume. We're keeping it 100 while faking there's no room. With the loudest interviews and the hottest guests, you done dealt with the rest, now roll with the best. But before I forget, let me get back to the script. Introduce you to the host of The Ship, Darren Smith.
Welcome to The Ship here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Darren Smith with you live in studio on this beautiful Sunday morning. This is the day, as they say, the Lord has made, and we are here. I got to tell you, this is a good day on multiple reasons, and I'll get to that in just a second. But again, I want to thank everyone for tuning in, either via your radio dial or 810WHB.com or even the app that we have out there. Darren Smith with you live in studio. We've got Blake Schneiders, who's keeping us on the air, or getting us back on the air from this morning. Also joining us, as always, Michael Coleman, the sports director for KLTV ABC 7. Michael, what's going on with you?
Fire department, you sound like you on fire over there in Kansas City, man.
Trust me, I got many reasons why I'm going to go to this. And we'll be joined in just a moment by our very own Nate Bucati. Of course, he's co-host of the Border Patrol. We'll talk to him. He's got a special coming on this afternoon from 2 to 3. We'll talk about that in just a moment, as the U.S. men's national team will be playing over at Sporting KC today. But, Mike, I got to tell you, one of the reasons why I'm so excited, is that, A, we had a homegoing celebration for my grandpa yesterday. He was 96 years old, so he lived a full life. Got a chance to celebrate, his life yesterday. But today, today is my baby nephew's birthday. It is also my baby cousin's birthday. But it's also the Queen Mother's birthday. My mom, it's her birthday today. And on top of that, I've got two new nephews that came into the world a little too much early, but they came this morning. I was at the hospital. They are healthy. They're healthy. So now I got five people's birthdays today. So, congratulations to my oldest brother, who's got, he's at the double digit mark when it comes to kids, but, Prince DeAndre and Prince Keandre are here today joining us. So that's why I'm happy, because
need to go play the lottery, man.
No, the Royals let me down yesterday by winning yesterday, but so I'm not going to do that. but Mike, taking a quick pause right quick. Again, we're joined by Nate Bucati, co-host of the Border Patrol with Stephen St. John. You can hear him every morning from 6 to 10 on this particular radio down. Nate, good morning to you.
Hey, good morning, and happy birthday to everybody in your family, man. Sounds like a great day.
Oh, yeah, it's about to be expensive, too. So as soon as I get through the show, we got a dinner for my mom, and then going to the soccer game today. But speaking of the soccer game, you're going to be hosting a special show today, here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I know the men's national team is taking on Uruguay over at Sporting Kansas City at 4 o'clock today. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to give everybody an update on your special today.
Yeah, so I'll be broadcasting from the stadium in the Budweiser Brew House from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock. I got some good guests lined up from some national media members that travel with the United States men's national team, cover the team on a daily basis, coming on the show. So it should be a lot of fun. Yeah, if everybody's coming out and coming into the Budweiser Brew House before the game, come by and say hi.
Where give me your thought process, a preview of today's game between the U.S. national team and Uruguay and what you're expecting.
So I'm really, really excited for this game. Now, a lot of people have asked me about this and said, hey, it's a friendly, so what's the big deal? Why does anybody care? Like, if they win or lose, it doesn't really matter, right? And that is true, but here I'll explain to you why this is such an important game and why I think it's going to be so fun to watch. The United States and Uruguay both are going to the World Cup in November in Qatar, and that's only a few months away. And when it comes to national team soccer, these countries do not get very many opportunities to play together. In fact, a lot of people would probably be surprised to know this, but the best club teams, the best professional teams in the world would mop the floor with any national team, because it's so much about the chemistry and the coordination of everything that a team does by training together every day, knowing exactly what kind of system they want to play, who's going to play where, the relationships that those players develop on the field. And you just don't get that many opportunities to do that as a national team, because all of your players are out playing professional soccer most of the time. Then they get together for these little windows, and they get to practice a few times, play a couple games, and then they go back off to their club team. So the United States is not going to get that many opportunities, none of these teams are, to play together until before the World Cup, which is just a few months away. So a lot of things are going to be happening today that Greg Berhalter, the head coach for the United States national team, is trying to figure out. He's still trying to figure out. He's got all these great young players that play in different countries all over the world. Who are the best players to fit together? Which players fit best in the system that he wants to play? How do they partner up with the other players on the field? And for the players, they're trying to prove to the coach that they should be, each one of them should be one of the players that he selects to go to Qatar for what would be the biggest moment of their professional life, which is playing in the World Cup. So they're playing for jobs. They're playing for spots on the roster. They're playing for spots in the starting lineup, which means they're going to play hard, and they're going to play to try to win. And Uruguay is in the same boat. They're going to the World Cup as well. And Uruguay is a really, really good team. They've won the World Cup twice in their history, which only a handful of countries have ever done that, and have ever won one, let alone two. And they just beat Mexico 3-0 earlier this week. So this is also going to be a big test for the United States. This is the best team they're going to play before the World Cup rolls around. And so this is a test for them to find out, like, okay, how do we stack up against one of the better countries in the world from South America, and how do our young players handle that situation? So for me, for all these reasons, I'm really, really excited to watch these young players play, see how they measure up against Uruguay, and see how some of those position battles shake out.
A couple questions for you. So when people are looking at this, of course, you know, the game's out at a sport in Kansas City, you got U.S., Uruguay. Can you give our audience, I guess, a little je ne sais quoi, knowing that this is going to be a different audience that's going to be attending this game than usually attends a Sporting Kansas City game? I mean, now both games are always sold out, but I'm just, you know, can you give us just like the importance, you talked about the importance of it, but just the type of atmosphere that you're going to get with these two countries there as a preview, you know, so to speak, of what we're going to see during the World Cup?
Well, that's a really good question, Darren, because, you know, the biggest thing that happened, so this is a little window where the United States is playing two games. They played earlier this week in Cincinnati against Morocco, which is a team from Africa that is also going to be playing in the World Cup. And after the game was over, the team captain, Christian Pulisic, who's, they call him Captain America, he's the biggest star on the team right now, he said, you know, in a post-game interview, that he wasn't very happy with the number of Americans that showed up to the game. And, you know, it was not a full sellout in Cincinnati. And the Moroccan fans that were there were more passionate and a little louder. There was a couple thousand of them. And he wasn't real happy about it. It's been a big conversation for a long time about why the United States doesn't draw better when it comes to their own national team playing some of these games. Because just a day later, for example, Mexico played in a stadium that was twice the size of the stadium in Cincinnati, and they played here in the United States, and they packed the place with Mexican fans, right? Mm. And so there's all kinds of discussion about this. Now, one of them, a lot of American soccer fans are quick to point out that the pricing by U.S. soccer it's expensive. They don't make it cheap to come to these games. You're talking, I think I spent, after fees and everything, and we bought some of the cheapest tickets they had, we spent about $75 a person for me and my family to go. That's a lot of money. That isn't easy, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the cheapest ticket. So I think that's one of the issues there. I think another thing, though, that you're dealing with there, it's a little unfair because, look, people who – and this whole conversation about what is American and all this stuff, I think what we're talking about here is if you are cheering for the United States, that we're not talking about what if you're a dual citizen, any of that stuff. The point being is, like, American fans who are cheering for the USA when it comes to this. And these other countries – who, if you're living in this country and you have heritage from Mexico, from Morocco, or whatever, and your national team comes to the United States to play, it's a rare opportunity for you to get to see them play. So it's a big deal for you to come and watch them. Whereas, like, if, you know, the United States, they come play in Kansas City fairly often. You know, seems like about every year or two you're going to see them here. Also, I think American fans, for the most part, other than people that are diehard fans like me, they kind of want to wait and see this team actually go do something in the World Cup. They look at this, and I can tell you all the reasons I think this is important, but I think the average American looks at this and goes, this is an exhibition game that doesn't mean anything. Why would I spend $100 a person to go watch a game like that? And so I think that's something that U.S. soccer has to continue to work on. I personally think they should look at their pricing, and in my opinion, they should be more interested in growing the sport of soccer in this country and getting as many people into these games as humanly possible so that they'll want to watch more and more games down the road. That's just my opinion. But the other thing is they got to keep winning. You know, they need to go to this World Cup and have a good showing, and that'll draw more interest. I think we'll have a good crowd tonight. I mean, I do. I think that we know Kansas City turns out, and they support big sporting events really well. I've been told that it's expected to be a sellout. I'll tell you another thing that happens, though, Darren, is, you know, United States Soccer holds thousands of tickets back for the corporate partners and people like that, and then they release those just a couple of weeks before the game back to the market in Kansas City to be sold to the public, which makes it hard, you know, because all of a sudden, most people that are already interested in going have already bought their tickets, and now all of a sudden you got thousands of tickets that are released into the market again. So those things all make it a challenge, but I do think it's going to be a sellout. I think it's going to be a really good crowd and a really good atmosphere today.
Mike, do you have a question before I follow up?
I learned a lot, Nate. How you doing, my man? Michael Coleman.
Hey, Mike, what's going on, man? It's good to talk to you.
Not much. Hey, you know, while you guys are talking about the kind of fans that go to these kinds of games, does it also apply to those youngsters who want to be soccer players, you know, with a showcase like today? Is it more attractive to some kids who aren't from America but who are, you know, that's their native? Or is it about the same, would you say?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, look, I think that some of it depends on, you know, what countries we're talking about here. I mean, I don't know how many people of Uruguayan descent live in Kansas City. But I almost guarantee you that every person who identifies as a Uruguayan that lives in Kansas City will be at that game today, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're from Uruguay and you live in Kansas City, you are not missing the opportunity to watch your national team play.
Right.
And that's a little tangent here, guys, but here's what's cool about Uruguay. So, you know, we all know that South America has some of the best soccer in the world. You're talking about Brazil, Argentina. Those are two of the biggest giants in the world. They got the two greatest soccer players maybe to ever live come from their countries. Uruguay is in South America. And they're kind of like the little engine that could. They punch above their weight. I can't remember I looked at it one time. I want to say that their total population for their whole country is something like 4 million people. I mean, it's a really small country compared to the other countries in South America, yet they've won 2 World Cups, and they always have really good players, and they fight like crazy. They are known as one of the hardest-working, toughest, most tenacious teams in the world. Everybody respects Uruguay. Like, if you're a big club from Europe like France or a big country from Europe like France or England and you're playing Uruguay, you know you're in for a fight on that day. And so the reason they're like that is because the people of Uruguay, every single person looks at the sport like it's a religion. It matters more than life to them in some ways. And so if you're from Uruguay and you live in Kansas City, you're sure enough coming to this game today. That I guarantee you that.
I know one thing. If there's anybody who ever has any question about soccer, all you got to do is listen to this man, because we're sitting there learning stuff just as we speak. Nate, I do want to ask you, you know, when we look at this, of course, on the 16th of June, we should be notified, of course, from whether or not Kansas City is going to be hosting some of these games. Just give me a time frame, because I know you talk about the World Cup is in Qatar this fall. When if Arrowhead gets announced to host some of these games, when will those games take place?
So the World Cup, ever since its inception, has always taken place in the month of June. That is usually, for almost all the leagues in the world, unlike MLS, MLS is one of the only leagues in the world that doesn't do this, but almost all the rest of the leagues in the world are off during June and July. So June is the month that the World Cup has always taken place. The reason it's in November this time around is because FIFA decided to put the World Cup in the middle of the desert, and it's 120 degrees in Qatar in June. And at minimum, and there was no possible way that humans can play soccer in those conditions. So it's only going to be like 90 degrees or 100 degrees in November. So they moved it back to November, which the American TV execs are not happy about, because, by the way, June is the perfect time to have the World Cup on in the United States, because you're just going up against baseball, basically, right? Like the NBA season's over. There's no football going on in November. You're dealing with college football, pro football. I mean, it's going to be not the ideal time for American TV execs in this World Cup. But that's why it's in November this time. So the one that will be in the United States, Mexico, and Canada in 4 years from now will be at this time in the middle of June.
Okay, yeah. When they were talking about it's going to be announced, I'm like, man, are we going to have soccer games this fall? So, okay, it's 4 years from now. Okay, good. Thank you, because I keep.
So, won't mess with the Chiefs' schedule. That, you know, they'd be playing at Arrowhead Stadium at the perfect time of year, that it won't mess with anything that they normally be doing there.
All right. So, look, Micah, any other questions for our guy, Nate?
No, just continue good work, my man, because you are the soccer guy in Kansas City. Let me ask you this. As strong as soccer has been for Kansas City, how much more attractive is it to games like today and perhaps a World Cup opportunity?
I'm really glad you asked that question, because the truth is, right now, Kansas City is a good soccer town, but you know, they do market research and all these things, and it's really about 20% of our city that even really acknowledges soccer as a real sport. Okay? So that 20%, now they're diehard sporting fans, right? And they turn out for all the games and they support everything.
Yeah.
But the rest of the town, it's still not really on the radar. And if we want to keep growing a sport that I love so much, you know, we got to keep expanding that base. We got to get more people to sit up and watch this game today and watch Sporting Kansas City games and take it seriously. And so we got to keep trying to grow it. And in my opinion, the next 4 years are going to be some of the most significant years in this country and in this city for the growth of soccer. And I'll take you back to 1994, when the World Cup was in the United States the first time. I was a high school kid at that time, and that was the first time I ever had a chance to watch any of these global powers like Italy and Brazil and France and everybody playing in the World Cup. That is why the MLS is here, or MLS is here right now. The league started in 1996. That was their first year, but the birth of it was the World Cup being in the United States. And for a long time, the league had struggled, but now it continues to grow. There are hundreds of millions of dollars being put in every organization in the league, and it's not going anywhere. So now you actually have a base that's developing young talent. We have the most talented young roster that we've ever had as an American team, and I believe there's only more and more coming, because they finally started to figure out with the club teams around the country how to develop young talent. And in 4 years, that World Cup could be in Kansas City, and I still don't think that the average person from Kansas City understands how big of an event that will be if, in fact, we get those games here. But even if not, just having it in the United States, and I believe having the best American team we've ever had that's actually ready to really compete with some of the biggest countries in the world, I think that the whole country is going to be, taken by this whole thing, and they're going to I think it's going to jumpstart and kickstart another wave of growth for the sport in this country and in this city, and that's why I think the next 4 years might be some of the most exciting times to get on board with soccer that that we've ever had in this country.
Mike, hopefully we can get Nate to drink from the Fountain of Youth so he can participate in the World Cup in 4 years from now so we can go out and support my guy. Hey, look, everyone, make sure you tune in today, 2 to 3 p.m. right here on Sports Radio 18WHB. We've got a preview of today's game featuring none other than Nate Bucchetti, who's going to be at the game. And, Nate, hopefully I'll get a chance to see you out there. And I know – I don't know if you're going to be dressed out, if you're going to be in one of your nice-ass suits, but I came dressed today, Nate, so I just want you to know. So when I see you, you're going to know.
Hey, man, I expect nothing less from you, man. I mean – You bring it strong every time. I know that's the case. I'm just gonna warn you right now. I am not gonna be dressed nice. I'm gonna be wearing my Uncle Sam's, you know, cheesy American T-shirt with the big, you know, stars and stripes top hat on. I'm gonna come as a fan today, so I'll be ready to go.
That's what's up. Tune in 2 to 3 p.m. Nate Bucchetti. Also, make sure you tune into the Border Patrol every morning from 6 to 10 a.m. so you can hear Nate Bucchetti along with Stephen St. John. Hey, Nate, thanks so much, man, for joining us this morning.
Hey, thanks for the time, guys, and the interest in talking about this. I'll see you out there.
Okay, sounds good. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll still have Mike on the line. We'll be joined by Todd Lebo. We're going to talk some OTA, some NFL football with Todd Lebo and Michael Coleman right here on the ship with Darren Smith here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Solomon Wilcott of PFF and Sirius XM NFL Radio, and you're listening to The Ship with Darren Smith on Sports Radio 810 WHB and ESPN Kansas City.
Back to The Ship with Darren Smith here on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 810WHB.com, live on this great Sunday morning. Multiple birthdays and multiple anniversaries and stuff going on. But with us, as always, Michael Coleman still. And joining us, our sports director here, our fearless leader, Mr. Todd Lebo. Lebo, how does that lawn look right now?
Got it done, baby. Looking good. It's going to rain. So I got the yard mowed, and I got it all edged and weed-eated and looking good because it's supposed to rain today and tonight. And maybe like the next day, and the next day, you never know.
Are you serious? Is it voting that much? I don't know.
You watch and they say it's going to do all this stuff, and then you just get prepared. You know, I don't want to get behind. You know what I mean?
Well, I wish I could say I cut my grass, but it's going to grow a little bit more. Look, man, we've had OTAs this week. I know the Chiefs and Mike. Of course, you cover the Cowboys. I guess my first question to you, Lebo, is: are you seeing anything that gets you pumped, excited, knowing that, you know, the first real football game, I guess you could say, is Chicago up in August for preseason, but, you know, that leads you to believe that this team is going to be what we've seen the last 4 years, or is there a lot of just fluff going on right now?
Well, these practices aren't really practices. I mean, they're OTAs, and they're important, for sure. But in the end, it's always just practice. And I like what I see and I hear about a lot of their young players. But you don't really know. We heard a lot of good things about Trey Smith last year, right?
Yeah.
And then it turned out he was great. We've also heard so much, oh, man, this guy here, man, can you believe this guy? He's doing these things. And then they're no good. So you don't know until you get in it. We knew once we saw Trey Smith playing, practicing like kind of full on at real training camp. And then once he's in the preseason games, he looked like he could play. And he certainly held his own. That was great. But, I mean, everyone talks great about George Karlaftis, right? Motor for days. You know, Trent McDuffie, big cornerback. I like all these guys, but we got to see him in the real deal. But it's football. And it's still more important around almost everywhere in America than any other sport. So practice in football turns out to be not even real practice. Voluntary practice in football turns out to be a bigger story than, you know, other sports in a lot of places.
You know, it's funny you say that because I know you were a little trending this week, but I know you talked about how really there's nothing else really going on in Kansas City, you know, sporting plays, you know, here and there. But of course, with the Royals playing it the way that they're playing, it's like, again, if Chiefs OTAs is bigger than a regular Major League, you know, baseball regular season game, that's a problem here in Kansas City. And be that as it may, are you surprised though for, I guess, the number of veterans who are, I know it's voluntary, But, you know, but we do see, you know, we see a Josh Gordon here. We do see, obviously, the new members of the Chiefs who are here getting acclimated. But you see a Travis Kelce, a Patrick Mahomes here. Now, we know last week they talked about Mecole Hardman having a pulled hamstring, but we haven't, you know, seen him this week. I don't even think we saw him last week. But no Chris Jones, no Frank Clark. And now that I think about it, haven't seen Juan Thornhill or some of these other veterans out here on the defensive side of the ball out here as well.
Yeah, it's, you know, what are you going to say? If you ask the coaches about this, it's voluntary. But, you know,
I remember Andy was mad a few years ago when we kept asking him, where's everybody?
Yeah, that was, I mean, that was really important, though. I mean, that team hadn't won a Super Bowl.
Right.
And they had just given, you know, Eric Berry a contract, right? And like, after he'd played a whole year on the franchise, and then it was like, wait a second, man. You're supposed to be the leader, and you're not there. And that bothered a lot of Chiefs fans. I think it bothered the coaches. I think when you remember Andy's responses, he was bothered by the questions. But generally, when he gets mad about a question, it's because he doesn't like what's going on.
Yeah.
Right? He didn't like the fact that Eric Berry and Justin Houston and Marcus Peters weren't there. All right? And, you know, like Patrick wasn't there this week, but he was out doing the charity thing with the match, and he's got his charity tournament going on right now in Hawaii. So it's okay, right? I mean, he did 4 weeks of his own personal training camp where he took time out and did his own phase one with people in Texas. So he's bought in, okay? There's no question about that. I don't know. Chris Jones, I think he's bought in. Yeah, for sure. I don't know about Frank Clark. I mean, Frank Clark just got another big pay cut, right? But I think I honestly feel, guys, that Frank Clark ought to be happy that he didn't get cut. Almost everyone else thought he was going to get cut. And you tell me, if Frank Clark was cut and was on the open market, would he have a job right now?
Probably not.
Yeah. And
to that point, because I was going to follow up and ask you, you know, obviously, I think one of the reasons why Frank Clark has probably stayed away, you know, perhaps if he's there, they might have to give him to us. And
they wouldn't give him to us. Damn, you know better than that.
I know. But I, you know, the question probably needs to be asked, and I don't know, maybe it's our fault that we haven't asked, you know, but, you know, they don't like gotcha questions, nor do they like questions that have legitimacy to it. But the fact that you've, you know, restricted his contract, and we have no idea what's going on with his two gun felony cases out in California. I mean, I don't know if it's been pushed back, if it's been delayed, if that's been taken care of or not. But the fact that they've, you know, they've restructured his contract, like you said, paid him less, but he's still on contract, and that hasn't been, you know, that hasn't been finalized yet. What's going on in California is a little surprising.
Yeah, it is. And like, if we ask Andy that, he's, I don't know if Brett handles that, right?
And we're not going to get Brett no time soon.
We've talked to Brett Veach a lot in the last couple of months, but there's been other things to talk about, right?
Yeah.
They drafted 10 players, you know? So, you know, you only have so much time to get these guys, and they're not sitting out there every day to talk to. And then some of those things just kind of get shuttled down the way, and they don't get asked. I don't know what's happened with this stuff out there. There initially was a court date that had already passed, but I think they've moved that to a different date, and there's two cases, and he hasn't even been charged in the other one, I don't think. So, you know, it's just kind of out there in the wind. But I think there's a lot of things like that out there in the world right now, because there's a whole lot of backlogs in the courts with police stuff, during COVID, and things weren't open. So things are just getting pushed back in a lot of areas, and that's probably good for Frank Clark. Because, I mean, I don't know how many great years of football Frank Clark has left. He'd probably love to push this all and get as much money as he can until whatever happens. I don't know.
First of all, I don't know how much of a joke that he's talking about how much good football he's got left. Like, we haven't seen it for the last couple of years.
Well, let's say good football means they're going to give you a check. How about that?
This is The Ship with Darren Smith. We're joined by Todd Lebo, Michael Coleman. Mike, you got any questions?
Mr. Lebo, Michael Coleman, how you doing?
Doing great today, buddy.
Hey, is it my imagination, guys, or is Tyreek Hill getting more offseason attention than ever before? And part of it being spent on defending his decision to go to Miami. Am I imagining that?
Well, I would say this. Now, he had, you know, 3 years ago, he had a lot of attention.
Exactly.
And that turned out, I mean, that was an earth-shaking thing in this city in a lot of ways. But this attention he's getting now is precisely the way the Chiefs don't do their business, right? I mean, I guess I don't think it's written in a contract that a Chiefs player can't have a podcast. But what Chiefs player has a podcast? Nobody, right?
Mm.
Now, they go on podcasts and stuff, right? We've seen some things where I think Travis Kelce was on now he was on one a few years ago. You know, I mean, they do those things. But this, what he's doing in Miami, is exactly what he has wanted to do. He wants to go have his voice and do his thing and be on South Beach and, you know, talk and do all that stuff. And that's precisely what the Chiefs don't like out of their players. They would much prefer they just do all their talking on the field.
Right.
And, Michael, you know, they do a good job of, especially, I mean, I think they've used COVID very well in this regard. Darren and I haven't been in the locker room since before the Chiefs won a Super Bowl. Okay,
that was
AFC Championship game when they beat the Titans. The last time we were actually in the locker room, now we had lots of availability. Like Super Bowl week, they had those things where you at the table, you could talk to anyone you want, right?
But
there's a difference between talking to someone at the table and talking to someone in the locker room, and maybe just talking to someone in the locker room without a microphone, right? Just talking, you know, those kind of things. But so you could go in there and you could, you know, have a chat with somebody or something. Now there's nothing, man. I mean, we could go back and look through the emails or the Zooms or whatever. How many times do you figure, Darren, that we have had a chance in Chiefs through the Chiefs to speak to Tyreek Hill?
Zero.
Nah, it's more than zero. That's
No. I'm not just talking about. We're talking about like I'm talking about away from.
No, I'm just talking about even like just the regular stuff. I mean, he was on. I remember him being on a Zoom.
We might have had him three times last year.
He was on a Zoom one time. Remember, there was a construction project happening in his house. Remember that one?
Yeah.
And it was hammering going on. And then I think he was in the tent one time at camp.
And then we had him post-game one time last
post-game
year.
Post-game a couple times. Yeah. And so that's about it. I mean, it's one of the biggest stars in football, and we've probably talked to him five times in two seasons.
Yeah.
And they like it that way because I don't think they really want Tyreek Hill out there giving his thoughts on the world. You know what I mean? And this podcast may be a big bunch of nothing. But right now they put – I haven't seen this weekend. Is there another teaser? They put two teasers out last week that lead you to believe there's something going to be said in this podcast. And that podcast isn't going to drop till the 10th. So he's just stringing people along, and we're eating it up because that's what we do as a society, right? And it's like – you're right, Michael. He's making waves. And he's making waves because he moved, right? So now he's got Kansas City and Miami both paying attention to him, and he's got the NFL paying attention to him. And he's got Drew Rosenhaus, who's one of the most high-profile agents, and he's still driving around in his car on his podcast. I mean, so he's got people's attention for sure. And none of it is for football. None.
Exactly.
And that's the thing that Chiefs
say.
And none of it's good, but to your point, it hasn't been this way where players have their own – oh, gosh, I'm not sure how many regimes it's been through, because obviously during Carl Peterson's time, you know, I mean, Derek Thomas and Neil Smith, you know, they were on 103, you know. They
had a radio show, right?
Yeah, and so
Timmy Grunhardt had a radio show.
Yeah.
He did down at the Levee, and there were, Mark Collins have a radio show? He might have. There's been like there were some guys that had radio shows. They allowed them to do that.
But I'm saying, but that was obviously in the Peterson era. I'm just trying to figure out when them and I don't know if it stopped with after he left or
Pioli wasn't down with that stuff.
Oh yeah, no. And of course they've just stuck with it ever since. And you know, I mean, I don't know, because it's interesting because, you know, we'll see the players out and about from time to time. And, you know, I see the players out at the barbershop all the time. And it's like they want to do stuff, but it's like they like you said, it's like they're handcuffed in a way. And it seems like they don't get their sense of freedom until they leave Kansas City, kind of like Tom Brady leaving New England, going to Tampa Bay. And, you know.
Right, and all of a sudden we find out he's funny. Yeah, we find out he's a funny guy. We didn't know that. We had no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably best for football, for the Chiefs, to not have everyone, because it's too much to chase if everyone's got a radio show.
Then it becomes a distraction.
Now, it's hard enough, guys, for them to chase down some of the, I'm not saying dumb, interesting tweets that have come out from Chiefs players, right?
Oh,
and we've seen some tweets. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu would tweet and delete a lot. And we saw the Instagram back and forth last year with Anthony Hitchens and fans. You remember Sammy Watkins and the lizard space people, you know, those kind of tweets. And so that's enough to kind of handle there. So they probably just assume, just control the message, man. That's the name of the game in sports for sure these days, is control the message. And that's it kind of goes against what we're all about. We want to get answers for people on important things, or sometimes unimportant things. Sometimes you just want to hear some personality from someone, you know,
well,
and
you know,
find
and
out kind of what they're about.
But and to your point, some of that is because that's how it used to be done.
Yeah.
You know, that we had that opportunity to get with guys, and there's been such a shutdown on having the opportunity to get with them about who they are when they're not playing ball that it's, I think you take away some of the steam of what they bring to the table.
Yeah, and they, you know, you'll get to be around them sometimes at a charity deal, right? I know Tyron had charity events. Tyreek had his basketball game, and they would pass turkeys out, and you do some things. So you get to be around them a little bit there, but, you know, it's just different. And listen, I don't want to sound like some old man here, but it's not going back to the way it used to be. I mean, it's just not, because players in some way want to control their own message. That's what the power of Twitter and social media is for them. Because they don't have to, you know, there have been several players, didn't it? Was the J.J. Watt thing, he announced that he had signed with the Cardinals, or did someone say it and he was right after? Whatever it is, these guys would just soon say it to sell.
Yeah.
They don't need us as the conduit. So now that kind of turns us into not just the conduit to give people news. We're the conduit to get people answers on things. And, you know, that's not happening all the time.
Let me ask you this, Lebo, and this is, you know, your opinion, and Mike, you can answer as well. Do you think, because the players are looking for more freedom, and the fact that regular media folk like ourselves, I don't have a problem with it either way. You know, they can do what they want to do. But because, I guess, they find different avenues. Again, Tyreek Hill, you know, I'm pretty sure if he really wanted to, unless it was in his contract, if he really wanted to, he could do a podcast here if he wanted to, but perhaps didn't. But then, you know, when he got to, like you said, when he got to Miami, he kind of freed himself up. But do you think it kind of makes, I don't say it like our jobs harder, because, again, these players, you know, they're going out there. If a Tyreek Hill says what he says, and, you know, look, some of what he may say, a teaser, whatever, might be newsworthy. We come back and ask, whether it's Andy Reid or if they ask his head coach about something that he says about it, you know, they'll try to decipher it and make it seem like it's not that big a news. But, I mean, but we don't have the access to them, you know, like they're doing now with these podcasts and going on, you know, some of these national shows that, you know, where they get a chance. And it's funny because the they get a chance to speak to them more than we do, you know, if they want to. You know,
because, you know, think about this, Darren. About every national show that they go on is a partner with a league.
Yeah.
Right? So if it's on a Fox show, they're partners with the league. If it's an ESPN show, they're partners with the league. If it's NFL Network, owned by the league. You know what I mean? I mean, so they put them on safe places where they think they can control the message, which is fine. I get it. I'm not saying that shouldn't be what happens. But, like, you know, like I said, I don't think anyone has something in their contract that says they can't do a podcast or anything on their own. They probably don't. But they know that it's not worth the trouble to do it because they may get in trouble with the boss, right? And that if you know, it's not worth – that's not a hill worth dying on. Because if you're making $12 million, you're not going to make $12 million off some podcast. So you might as well go play football, have a podcast when you're done. Now, the Chiefs, I do think, are a little more restrictive than most. And the people I've talked to who cover teams around the league on access to players and what the players can do, obviously something's different in Miami.
Right.
You know, I mean, because he's got a podcast coming out, you know. Now, he's had a YouTube channel for a while where he, you know, he's floating around on a boat in Miami or something, usually off-season stuff or, you know, playing basketball. Remember what a controversy it was when Patrick Mahomes was playing basketball like 4 years ago? And
oh,
my God, what if he gets hurt? You know, I mean, has Tyreek Hill stopped putting videos up of him dunking and shooting? No. I mean, you see videos all the time. So I think, you know, that it's kind of – you just know it's not worth the trouble. I mean, you like to play basketball. You like to run hoops. That's fine. But then when you think about it, well – it really would be a bad thing if I hurt my knee playing basketball and then I couldn't play football, which is your real bread and butter. So some of the guys decide it's not worth the time. I mean, how many times were we sitting there in the locker room 3 years ago watching these guys play basketball in the locker room with equipment and helmets and balls and shoe bags laying around? And we're like, someone is going to get hurt playing basketball in this locker room. You know what I mean?
And in Lowell, wasn't Chris Jones the one that got hurt?
Well, they would never say it was from that. Right? Oh. We know he played a lot of basketball.
Yeah.
In the locker room every day. So, I mean, I don't know if they're still playing basketball in the locker room. We ain't been in there in 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I guess the biggest thing for me is that, because I remember having this conversation with Adam Teicher, I think earlier this week, when, you know, we talked about the locker room access coming back this fall, that, you know, the biggest thing is that, you know, with the players being able to go go, you know, into different areas to, I guess, tell the story. I guess if you're old school, it kind of cuts your access because you know, because back in the day, you used to be able to, you know, sit and have those profile type interviews and, you know, either via the paper or radio or TV.
But here's an example.
With the players.
Here's an example. Like one of the best stories I think that got written in the past year was Sam McDowell wrote the story about L'Jarius Sneed and his family,
yeah.
Right? And, you know, and then he got that story out, and then later, you know, gosh, it wasn't but a month later maybe, his brother got stabbed, right? Or shot, one of the two. It was, you know, it just all made sense. He didn't get any help from the Chiefs PR to write that story. He had to go do that like the old way,
yeah.
Where you would get talk to someone. And my understanding is they weren't super happy that he wrote that story, even though it was a really nice story. And it told you a lot about what L'Jarius was about. And L'Jarius was fine talking to him. And his family was fine talking to him. But the Chiefs would just rather not have even a story like that out there because they feel like the next one may not be good. You know what I mean?
Wow. Mike, I know you cover the Cowboys. I mean, how are they, I guess, with their access when it comes to, you know, doing profiles and access to the players down there?
They're about the same. They, you know, and you know, of course, the guy you would go to get that green light, he resigned. Rich Dalrymple, who was their PR guy, and was accused of videotaping cheerleaders. So we're just now dealing with this new regime of him not being there anymore because he came over from Miami with Jimmy Johnson. And he stayed. He was there forever. And he was the guy you went through. And then, of course, he developed a staff, and they knew what to do. So in years past, it's been real tight, hard to get. I don't see that really changing much now that Rich Dalrymple is no longer there. I see it probably be about the same.
Yeah, listen, there's no – they don't need to do anything, right? This isn't the government. They're required to come talk to us. But, you know, the Pro Football Writers Association has, you know, gotten some rules in place for that. You know, that's why we get to talk to coordinators and we get to talk to a quarterback. We get to – I mean, there's some rules in place because, you know, it's good for them to get the word out, but also they would just soon put the word out themselves. I mean, the Chiefs now, they don't even send emails to the media first about if they sign someone to a contract. They tweet it out. And I'm not complaining because we've always kind of run our radio station because in a way to where we would just be a conduit for fans to hear what we want. That's why we play full press conferences. They can hear what it wants. So we're not taking something out of context to all that. So I don't mind if this stuff's going straight to the fans. I really don't mind. But I don't like that it seems like the Chiefs are actively trying to stop the media from having access to players, you know. They just really would rather not it be that way, and I don't think it's best for the fans. Maybe it's best for the organization, and if it's best for the organization, that's great for fans, I guess. Maybe the fans could just follow the Chiefs on social media and just get whatever spoon fed to them. But that can get dangerous because sometimes things can happen. We've seen a lot of things. You're talking about that down there in Dallas, Michael, or everything that's going on in Washington.
Right, I was just about to go there.
There's issues that are happening within these teams that I think. Even though they're not publicly owned companies, I think there is a public trust with these teams because there's not one team that doesn't some way benefit in either taxes or deferred taxes, land, whatever, something from the public in the city or the county or the state that they're in. They all get something. So I do think there's an obligation that they should be as open as they as would like because they're not all good people running all these things. And I'm not talking about players. I'm talking about the stuff that's happened in some of these front offices or ownership that I think people deserve to know about for sure. And it just seems like they're really actively fighting on the little things sometimes. It doesn't make sense to me. I get fighting on the big things, but not the little ones.
The biggest concern that I have, Lebo, is, you know, to your point about, you know, how they're trying to control the media is that, look, when we ask for people and ask people, folk, you don't want us to talk to them. And then, again, like you try to keep us away from the players, you know, at least for the last 2 years, obviously for different reasons from the locker rooms. But here's the thing. If we are out and about and we just happen to be where a particular player is and some go down and that player may or may not be involved, the Chiefs are going to expect us to have their back and to not report or do something. It's like, nah, bro, this is news. Like,
yeah, that's bad news.
You know, and so it's like, but you know, you want us to throw you a bone, but you won't do the same in return. So now that's why, you know. And I tell fans, I tell people all the time, they're like, oh, you know, you a fan of the Chiefs? I'm like, you know, I mean, I like the organization. I mean, and I love the players, but I'm not a fan per se. And I have to explain to people that in the world of journalism is that, you know, I'm only beholden to the truth and the facts. And it's like, I don't try to go out there to try to be, you know, friendly or friends with the players, because it's going to come a point in time where if you have to be critical, you have to do it from a credible space. And, you know, and to be honest, you know, I thought in our field, Lebo, we're supposed to be truth tellers on top of being storytellers. And, you know, we're supposed to hold those in power accountable. So I tell people that, you know, look, I love when the Chiefs have success, especially if they go to Super Bowl, because, you know, hey, we go to Super Bowl, fine.
It's fun. It's good for business. It's good for everyone. It makes people excited to listen to the radio or listen to a podcast or read the paper or watch television. If the Chiefs are, you know, 7-9, well, I'd say 7-10 now, right? I got to get that right. 7-10, I mean, that's not eyeballs. That's not firing your coach. That's not making a change. That's not anything. So you either got to be really bad and people are interested to see what's going to happen, or really good because people just want to listen. It doesn't matter what. I mean, 2019, 2020, with the Chiefs, I mean, anything is news because they are the big story, just like the Royals were the big story 6, 7, 8 years ago. You know, so we certainly, good is better than bad because, and worst, like I said, the worst thing is mediocrity. Then people just don't care, you know. But if you're bad long enough, they quit caring as well. But yeah, you have to. We're out here to try to help people get what we think they want to hear, and sometimes it's not what you want to hear; it's what you need to hear.
Yeah.
And that's what gets us in trouble sometimes with these organizations, because they don't want us to tell the fans what we think they need to hear about a certain thing. And that's not a lot around here. I mean, there's not been a lot of big things around here, but there have been enough things that happened that I think it's your obligation as a journalist to try to get the truth out with things that are happening in your community. That's what it is, and there's less and less of that going on because these places control everything themselves.
Michael, what you didn't catch just then was that Lebo just dated all of us when he talked about the Royal success 7, 8 years ago. That's when they won the World Series. I'm sitting there like, damn, it's been that long. I remember being in London when they won the World Series, and like, oh my gosh,
like, interns that we have coming through here, you know, they probably weren't even allowed to stay up that late to watch the World Series games like 2014. You're talking 8 years ago. We got like an 18-year-old intern or something. That kid was 10, and they're probably like, it's a school night. You can't stay up and watch the wild card game. You know what I mean? So it's been a while. Time is rolling on.
Before we get out of here, Lebo, obviously we spoke. We got a couple of minutes. We spoke to Eric Bieniemy and Matt Nagy this week. Did you take anything away from their appearances?
Well, they said all the right things. You know, they're going to work well together and do all that. They've worked together before. I think Nagy seemed pretty relieved. I know I wasn't at the Chicago press conference.
Stress-free.
But, I mean, listen, he made a lot of money, right? So you get to be in the head coach in the NFL for a few years and make a lot of money. He actually had some pretty good success. They made playoffs, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
twice, and like was coach of the year.
This wasn't a disaster up there. But now he gets to come here to the best offensive room that there is, with the best offensive players that there is, and it should be a challenge still too, because there is no Tyreek Hill. So now you got to try to find new things. It's new solutions, working with people you're comfortable with, and like he was kind of joking, he was telling his son, he said, yeah, it's different. You know, I got more time now. I mean, because when you're a head coach, it's everything, everything, everything. When you're a quarterback's coach, you're working hard. They're grinding, okay? He's not in there, you know, they're not going to work 17 hours a week or something in the football season. But it's a different deal. So he seemed relieved. And I thought EB seemed like he's in a pretty good place too. He seemed very happy. You were asking the questions about the symposium they had. I think he feels like things are going the right way in that direction. And he never, in front of us, ever shows any frustration with the fact that he hasn't gotten a head coaching job. He says he's just going to keep trying and trying to bang the door down. And that's what life is about, right? Getting told you can't do something, and you just keep trying and trying and trying. So I think those guys are going to work well together. I really do. I don't think there'll be a problem, because in the end, who's the boss of the offense?
Andy Reid.
Andy. Okay.
So. And to your point, look, I've had this conversation – Patrick Mahomes is getting paid $500 million. If he wanted Eric Bieniemy gone, Eric Bieniemy would not be there.
That makes sense to me. I mean, absolutely. Those guys, if you get to his point in the NFL, then you can run a lot of things.
Yeah, exactly. Lebo, thank you so much for joining us, man. I know you'll be on vacation this week, so I won't see you out at One Arrowhead Drive, so I'll be the troublemaker out there this week.
It's all you, buddy. Yeah. I'm going to be at work Monday and Tuesday, then I'm off Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
All right, man, enjoy yourself. And Mike, stay with us. We'll be back after this time out. You're listening to The Ship with Darren Smith. We'll be joined by Tanisha Mahomes and Linda Dorsey, two gems and a mic, right after this.
This is Rob Parker from FS1 and Fox Sports Radio, and you're listening to The Ship with Darren Smith on Sports Radio 810 WHB and ESPN Kansas City.